Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Let's get started, ladies. Good evening. Last week, we started the final malacha in this series, in order number one, which is malachas Ofa and Bishul. We said that Ofa is baking and Bishul is cooking. The Mishnah uses the word Ofa, which is baking, which is because simply because this is the order of making bread. And the final step, of course, is baking. Despite the fact that you and I, generally speaking, when we talk and refer to this malacha, we call it Bishul. They're one in the same for almost all purposes. And again, I want to just reiterate that not, even though you only find Ofa in the typical list, I believe the list that I gave you has both, next side to side. One is not a tolda of the other, they're both the Av, so to speak. Okay, and I did mention, as I've been warning you, I think, for a while already, this is a doozy. This is one of the biggies. This is a very challenging malacha, multifaceted, many different parts and pieces. So my goal in the sheath was to break it down to its elemental parts, which by themselves will just be labels and definitions and terms, will really not make any sense lahalacha yet. But then as we build, you know, today already we're going to get to putting those pieces together and what those, you know, practical halacha. So that's where we are. So we started page one, the pictures. We talked about a kli rishon, a first vessel on the fire, a kli rishon, a first vessel off of the fire, a second vessel and a third vessel. That's the first series of the soup there on top. And then the second one is an urn, hot water, which the urn itself is the first vessel. It's the actual heat source. And then the first cup is the second vessel, the second cup being the third vessel. Yes, ma'am.
When they talk about something being on fire, off fire.
Yes.
If it's a blech where the heat is just consistent throughout and the heat doesn't go up or down, is it?
That's considered on the fire.
Okay.
Yeah. That's considered on the fire. We'll talk about the minimum temperature to be considered on the fire shortly. But if there's a heat source there, whether it's blech or not, it's going to be considered on the fire.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a confusing point, I think, for a lot of folks. But that's true. Good evening.
Hi.
Okay. You both got the packet? Okay. So just doing a little review from last week. So one of the points I want to make before we go on is no spot per se to put this, but just to make the point, you'll notice that there's no revi, there's no fourth vessel, there's no such thing. There's a first, a second, and a third. There is no fourth. And we will see as we get further down in our discussion that the further away you are from the heat source, the more lenient it gets, the more you're allowed to do as you get further along. So you're allowed to do almost everything with a third vessel, a second vessel kind of in the middle, and first vessel almost nothing at all. But there is no such thing as a fourth vessel. That's just a given, so to speak, as in geometry. It has a given of these halachos. There's no such thing as, well, transferred again and you can do more. No, there's really no, there's no such thing. There's almost no need. As we'll see shortly, there's very little you can't do in a shlishi. But there's just no such animal. There's no such thing. Okay. I also want to touch on one of the famous questions in Hilchos Shabbos, which is why? Why is a kli sheni or a kli shlishi, a second vessel or third vessel, less problematic, more permissible than its predecessor? Meaning, you have a bowl of soup, it's boiling on the fire, and you take that off and you pour it into a serving bowl, you pour it into an individual's bowl. It could be seconds from the transfers from one to two, two to three, and yet the halacha changes significantly. Although, if you took out a thermometer and measured those temperatures, the temperature would not be significantly different. Certainly it would change, certainly it would get cooler, but the soup in the bowl that's in the pot, let's say it's 212, is boiling, you know, maybe it loses a couple, 3 degrees each transfer, but it would not drop significantly. It's not going to drop in half. You know, it's going to take 10, 15, whatever minutes for it to drop significantly. It depends on the size of the bowl, depends on how much air, you know, what the surface area is. So there's a lot of factors, a lot of variables involved, but certainly just transferring it from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3 is not going to be a huge deal in its temperature and its ability to cook something else. So Tosfos addresses this issue And he said, certainly from 1 to 2, we can see readily the differences. In the first vessel, the pot is hot. The walls of the pot are hot. And therefore, we look at that as it is, it's increasing in its heat, it's actively cooking, it's something which is very hot, and again, the vessel itself is hot. Whereas the second vessel already, the vessel itself is cold, by definition. In order for a kli to be a sheni, in order to be a second vessel, it's not been on the fire. If it was on the fire, it would by definition be a first. So, by the fact that you transferred it to something which is not, the walls of the pot are not hot, you need this? Indicates to us that it is the walls are not hot and therefore it is less powerful in cooking. And then, you know, the difference between 2 and 3 is less apparent, is less obvious because they both, neither of them were hot themselves. But that is the rationale. Without getting too deeply into it, that is the rationale. And to a certain extent, there's a certain amount of logic, but to a certain extent, this is the way it is. The halacha has established that this is, you know, 1, 2, 3 in that order, and that's something that we accept, and that's something that's a given. Okay, now, also before we turn the page, an important rule, which I really don't have a spot on here for, which is the concept that once something is cooked, you can't recook it. Meaning, you can't, the term always confuses people. When we say, when something is already cooked, you can't recook it, it means there's no opportunity to violate the prohibition of cooking twice on the same item. So that we all understand, if you have a piece of chicken, you stick it in the oven, and it's in there for 350 for an hour, let's say, it's cooked. It has a different texture than it had before, a different taste, different chemicals, different bacterial, it's no longer has the same bacterial effect as all the stickers tell us today. It's a different, it's the same, but it's totally different. It's just changed. We all readily appreciate that. Certainly with solids, it's very obvious and very easy to understand. Once that piece of chicken is cooked, fully cooked, you can't violate the prohibition official on that same piece of chicken again. It's been through the process. It's over. And that's going to play an important role as we go forward. We'll see in warming things up on Shabbos. If you already cooked it Thursday night or Friday or some other times, methodologies, you can't violate. There's no prohibition of cooking it again. But the other issues that we have to address, but the core issue that we're dealing with from the get-go, at least, is the violation of cooking itself cannot be violated twice on the same item. Okay? So again, you just pin that in at the bottom of page 1 here, page 15, whatever it is. Bishul cannot be, one cannot violate bishul on the same item twice. Once it's cooked, it's cooked. Okay. All that clear so far? I mean, again, you don't have a concept. I'm giving you ideas which don't really fit into a framework yet. But they will. I promise. Okay, so turning the page, ladies, we talk about different types of food. And the type of food is going to make a big difference. We have 3 kinds of liquids and 2 kinds of solids. The first kind of liquid is uncooked liquid. So tap water is a great example. It is an uncooked liquid. It's water, it's been purified, it's been through different processes, but the average water has never been cooked. It's just uncooked liquid. Here, ladies, we will have a problem of bishul. Taking that water and now warming it up to temperature we're going to get to shortly, but warming it up past that certain temperature, past that threshold, would be a biblical violation of cooking on Shabbos. So putting a kettle up, putting water in a microwave. Microwave is a little bit complicated, but let's just assume microwave is an oven like any other oven. Plugging an urn in so the water boils. All those types of things would be a biblical prohibition of violation of bishul, because you're taking uncooked liquid and you're cooking, you're warming it up. You're cooking it to a certain point. Okay? So, say again? If you do it on Shabbos. Yeah. We're going to talk at length about how to avoid all these issues. But to cook an uncooked liquid is a biblical violation of cooking on Shabbos. Now you've got 2 kinds of cooked liquids. You've got cooked liquids which are cool, cooled off, and then cooked liquids which are currently hot. Cooked liquids which are cold, milk, is a good example. Most milk is pasteurized, flash pasteurized, and therefore it is considered a cooked liquid, which is cooled. I think a lot of juices are pasteurized today. Let's say a soup that you made at home and now is cold, it's in the fridge. These are all examples of cooked liquids which are now cold. So based on the principle we just said before, you can't violate cooking twice on the same item. You cannot violate, that's true, if you take the chicken soup, let's say, you made Thursday night and you put it back up on the burner, Shabbos day, Shabbos night, that is not a violation, not a biblical violation. But this, where things get a little exciting, this is a rabbinic violation. It's rabbinically prohibited to reheat liquids. Because on one hand, we have the rule of once something is cooked, it's cooked, you can't violate it again. On the other hand, hot water that's now cold is water. I mean, there's no differentiating, maybe under a microscope you could tell, but it's very, very hard for any of us to really tell that this water and that water are different. This is tap water that's fresh, so to speak, uncooked, and this is water that was boiled and cold. And what's the difference? So Chazal, as they very often do, came along and said, don't do that. Don't reheat water or any other liquid for that matter that was cooked and now is cold because it's too close for comfort. It's just too similar to the real deal.
Even though you're not changing the consistency.
Right. Depending on how long you cook it for and how long you let it boil out. And,
so even though milk is cooked, you can put some in like a saucepan and put it on the hot plate.
Oh, so we're saying rabbinically you cannot do that.
Okay.
Yeah. We're saying biblically, thank you for asking, biblically you could do that. From the Torah itself, you'd be able to take milk that you buy, assuming it's pasteurized from Kroger, from Publix, from wherever, and make hot chocolate on Shabbos morning. But rabbinically, the rabbis came along and said, don't do that. Because what's the difference between, if you could find it, milk that's not pasteurized and milk that is pasteurized? There's no difference really, no obvious difference. And therefore the rabbi said, no. It's prohibited to reheat already cooked liquids. Which plays an important role in practical halakha. Yeah, microwaves, I mean, of course you have electricity issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying theoretically here, opening the microwave, closing your microwave. Of course, you've got lights going on and off, you have noise devices. But ignoring all that, just the cooking process itself, it's not 100% clear, at least to me, what category that would fall into, whether it's the real deal cooking or whether it's rabbinic. It's probably rabbinic. In other words, taking a piece of raw chicken and cooking it in a microwave would probably be a rabbinic prohibition.
What about
we can't do it, and I don't get too deeply into my
so for purposes of all this, you're probably better off just going with examples of if you had a hot plate left on.
Or
you left a flame on.
Yes. I mean, I should explain before I get your question. I don't know if I touched on this yet last week or not, but there's two malachos which are very different, but at the same time we very easily get confused. There is bishul, cooking, which is 11, and then there is havara. Havara is kindling. Havara is starting a fire. So obviously they both come together very often.
In
the chash should be next door. Yeah. Sure. Please join us. Welcome. Bishul is cooking, which has to do with the definition we gave last time was changing the consistency of something by heat, whether it's a food or whether it's a metal. Our topic obviously is food. And kindling is starting a fire. Again, if you think about it, it's two totally, absolutely separated ideas. But so it's a good point that you're making, that when we talk about cooking on Shabbos, we should assume, the oven's on, or the hot plate's on, or, the heat source is already there. So we're going to get into it shortly anyway. But for most of our conversation, we really just focus on the cooking aspect of it.
So
I wouldn't say I'm sorry. I think you got a question over here.
I have a question. What if your bless is on timer? Can you put like cold liquids in the bless and it's like...
Excellent question. We're going to get there. Hold on to that question. Excellent question. Timers, and that's already stage two or three. We're getting through stage one right now. Yes, ma'am.
So what if you've got a pan of meat and the meat's cooked,
mm-hmm.
and in the bottom of the pan of meat there happens to be
residue, gravy, or residue liquid that has resulted from the cooking.
Right.
So you have to take the meat out of the pan and put it into a different pan.
Good question. We'll get there too. The answer is going to depend. The answer is going to depend really on how much. In other words, if there's a significant amount of liquid, then we would say that's you're reheating a liquid, and the rules of reheating liquids will apply. If it's not significant, it's kind of just there for the ride, then we would not worry about it. Where the line is between those two, you guessed it, is not exactly 100% clear. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a very gray, thin line. But we would draw a line there somewhere. Okay, so it's good. Everyone's, the wheels are already turning, and I hate to keep putting the questions down, but... Okay, so again, we have an uncooked liquid, like water from your tap. We have cooked liquids. We talked about chicken soup. We talked about milk from the typical American milk bottle. And then you have cooked liquids, which are hot. So cooked liquids, which are hot, are already cooked, and they're still hot. So you can't, there's no prohibition at all of cooking them, of warming them further. We'll talk about the practicality of that. But the biblical prohibition of cooking doesn't apply because it was cooked. And the rabbinic prohibition of cooking doesn't apply because it's still hot. And it's definitely a difference between water at 212 or 200 or 150 even, and tap water. I mean, there's no. They might look the same, but they're not. They function differently, they taste differently, they use them differently. They're just not the same thing. And therefore, the rabbis did not come along and say, you can't take hot water and warm it further or pour it into your chalent or something like that. All that is permissible. Again, we'll discuss how and when and other details. But just to lay down the basics. So those are three different types of liquid, and it's unique. We'll see, you know, it's unique from the solid in the sense that as soon as it cools off, usually it reverts back to being what it was before. You know, soups maybe a little bit less. Okay, and then we get into solids. Of course, there's going to be two kinds of solids. There's going to be uncooked and cooked. Uncooked solid, as we discussed, like a piece of chicken, is clearly uncooked, and therefore one is not allowed to cook that on Shabbos. That would be a biblical prohibition of cooking on Shabbos, to take a piece of chicken, to take a raw potato, to take any solid you can think of, and heating it up beyond a certain, that magical point, which we haven't revealed yet. But heating up at that to a certain point would be bishul, would be a biblical prohibition of cooking.
Where,
yes. Well, again, whether it's biblical or rabbinic, I want to kind of avoid. But certainly a regular conventional oven or gas, electric, you know, anything conventional type of thing. And then the last category would be a cooked solid. A cooked solid, there is no biblical and there is no rabbinic prohibition of cooking that item again. So a cooked piece of chicken, a cooked potato, potato kugel, you know, lokshin kugel, noodle kugel, all these types of things, there is no biblical prohibition of cooking on Shabbos, and there's no rabbinic prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. Because cooked it is, and again, you cannot violate cooking twice. It's already gone through its molecular changes and its and all that's done. And Chazal didn't, rabbis did not come along and say, don't do that, because it's clear, the difference between a raw piece of chicken and a cooked piece of chicken is clear and obvious. Mistakes are not going to happen. So they did not forbid that in any way, shape, or form, which again allows us to warm things on Shabbos that were cooked previously. Okay? Those are five kinds of foods, and all that's going to play together once we get all these terms and ideas out. Okay, any questions about those five? Okay. Now, the heat level, which we keep referring to, the level of heat. So this gets a little tricky also. There is a temperature, which the rabbis refer to, which is when the hand recoils from that temperature. If your hand would recoil from touching that temperature, that already is the threshold beyond which one is not allowed to warm food. And there is a significant debate as to exactly what that temperature is, not surprisingly. You can imagine the Gemara does not say Fahrenheit or Celsius. Yes, it's way past already. Yes, the question is, what's the minimum? Meaning, if you're coming at, you know, if tap water coming into your house is, I don't know, 60 degrees, let's say, these days, just as a guesstimate, 70 degrees, whatever it is, at what point, how warm can you make that water and not violate
official, or said differently, after what point do you now violate the prohibition of cooking? So that in the winter, if you take water, for example, out of your faucet at 45 degrees, let's say, and you leave it on the counter, it will warm up to 70. It'll take a little while, but it'll eventually get to room temperature. That is not a violation of bishul. That has nothing to do with cooking. But at what point is it cooking? So, again, there's a very significant argument, but for our purposes, it's about 115 degrees. About 115 degrees, 115, which is quite low. I don't know if you can get your oven down that low.
So when you say when the hand recoils, is that from the cooked element or from the cooking element? Is it from the hot plate surface or from
the food itself?
The food itself.
That's a good question. If the element is that hot, but the food cannot get that hot, then it's not. That's not an issue. The focus is the temperature of the food. The only way you would really know this, I guess, would be with a thermometer. The food thermometer. But yeah, the focus here is, if, for example, you had a hot plate here and it was 200 degrees and somehow the food was, and we'll discuss methodologies like this, the food was over here and there's no way, you've tested it on Tuesday, there's no way the food here on top of something else, let's say, is ever going to get to that two. It's not going to get one past 115. That'll be fine. There might be some other issues which we'll discuss. But that's not bishul. If the food, it's an excellent question. If the source is over that temperature, but the food can never get there, you don't have an issue.
Okay.
That's not cooking. The concern is this food is going to go from less than 115 to over 115.
So then would you put like pan of chicken on maybe like an upside down foil pan or something?
Inverted pan method.
Direct?
Right. So we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, without mixing too into the practical yet, but clearly you're not going to want to take raw chicken and cook it that way.
Right.
You'd end up with the health department on your case. And your family's been very
accepting. Well, that thing does cook like eggs.
So an egg would be a practical example, right? You could cook an egg at a very low temperature, and that isn't as discussed, you know, widely. The most practical example of this is going to be it'll take a while. Yeah.
Take a while.
And I'm not sure if that's safe or not. But warming liquids would be a more practical example of this when it gets to that temperature. Okay, so again, there's a wide range, and for other reasons, it's important to know the other side is like 175 or so. But for our purposes, it's just simple enough to state that it's about 115, and if you go from less than that to above that, that is already considered bishul, but it's already considered cooking the food item. Okay, again, even though our ovens, I suspect, start at 200 and go up to 5 or something like that. Less than that would violate the prohibition. Okay, and then the last term on the bottom of this sheet, page 16 here, is irui. Irui means pouring.
Pouring?
Pouring. As in pouring a liquid into a pot, into a cup, something like that. So, we're going to see how that applies momentarily, but for example, when you pour from a kli rishon into a kli sheni, we would call that irui. You're pouring from one to the other, and that those halachos will be slightly different than, in other words, food pouring, let's say, hot water on a raw egg would be different than having the raw egg in the pot. I didn't say that very well at all, did I? If you have the raw egg, let's say, in a kli sheni, and you're pouring from the rishon into the sheni, so onto the egg and into the cup. That would be one, that's called ira, that's one set of halachos. As opposed to having the water there first, pouring the water from the urn, which is a rishon, a first vessel, into the cup, let's say, which is a second vessel, and then putting the egg in. That's not called ira. And that would be a different, slightly different halacha. So it really just depends on who predates who. Is the food there first and the water or other liquid in this case, falls on it, or challenge, or whatever, falls on it, or the other way around.
Is that true, like, when you have ice cubes, cool liquid?
What do you mean?
Well, like, would it be an issue whether, if I have a pitcher, and I want to put water in it, does it matter whether I put the ice cubes in first, and then add water, or put the water
Excellent
in
question. That's not bishul. That's not bishul because I'm on a cold side.
Right.
Theoretically, which malacha is this? Dash. We discussed this on a dash. Theoretically, there are some who would look at that and say there's a difference. Yes. Most people don't worry about it.
Okay.
For our practical purpose. But yeah, you don't want to hear all this, every stringency in the world. You don't want to go there.
So that'd be the same thing as when you have a glass of tea, cold tea. Do you put the ice in first and then the tea, or the tea? I mean, does it matter?
So there are people. There are people. I'm thinking maybe Shoshana. Who would that's right, what's ice in Israel? That's right, ice is not really something they worry about so much. We're just spoiled down here. So there are definitely Jews who would put the liquid in first and then see. That's true. Whereas most, you know, I've asked the child salt multiple times from different people, and they say don't worry about it.
Okay.
I think we touched on this under Dush. The issue is if the ice melts and now you're benefiting from the ice, is that no life? Are you creating a new entity called cold water?
Okay.
So there are people who worry about that, and I'm not here to dismiss any stringencies, but I'm also not interested in pushing them on anybody either, including myself. You know, maybe it's a good point to interject. I remember vividly being in a class, this was 5 years ago, with one of my Rebbeim, and he said he was reading an article from a Jew, from a rabbi, who was talking about finding stringencies, you know, like shapa chumra, you know, like finding a stringency and implementing it into your life. And my rabbi said that's not his tradition from his mentors. He was a student to Rav Aaron Cutler, one of the great of the greats of American Torah giants. You know, it just simply was not his, and certainly not my tradition. We're not interested in skirting the halacha, we're not interested in being, you know, specifically being lenient about halacha. We shouldn't view this is being April 15th, we shouldn't view doing mitzvahs like paying taxes. You know, you try and do the absolute minimum and go home. That's appropriate for taxes. No one says you pay more than you owe, right? That's ridiculous. But at the same time, as we should do the halacha and keep it properly, you know, my tradition certainly is not to look for stringencies. You know, how can I make my, you know, be even more strict and find other opinions? There's room for that, but okay, I digress. So again, we talked about the heat level, and then we just talked about Iroi pouring onto the food item instead of having the food item being put into the hot water or the food. Okay, hold on to your hat.
Here it comes.
Okay, now issues in Hilchos Bishul. So before we go anywhere, ladies, I want to just explain my attempt at using a lettering system here. It's maybe not the best attempt in the world, but it's an attempt. You'll notice there's a capital A and a capital B. Those are under Isser Da'oraisa, which means biblical prohibitions. The first section there, the first 2 points, are biblical prohibitions. Those are terms we introduced way back when in November. So Isser Da'oraisa means biblical prohibitions. So issues in Hilchos Bishul, Isser Da'oraisa again means biblical prohibitions. It's got capital A and capital B. And then the second half here is Isser Da'rabanan, which are rabbinic prohibitions. Okay? And then you'll notice that I use lower cases in the second half. Lowercase a, double a, lowercase b, and lowercase c. So if you could please change lowercase c to be triple a, lowercase a times 3. A.
Is a, a, b, a.
Yeah, in other words, it's lowercase. Now that I'm changing c to be a, it's out of order. But if I were to redo this, it would be lowercase a, a, and then lowercase a. Followed by B. So we could rearrange that. And like I said, next, you know, God willing, you could do that. Whatever floats your boat. Yeah, you could definitely do that. Okay. Okay. Whatever works for you. As long as you've got an A, a double A, and a triple A, and then a B. No, that just adds to the confusion, but no, that's not really the crux of the issue here. Okay, so as I mentioned before, there's really two
prohibitions, which are very disparate, very distinct, but at the same time, when we look at these halachas, we have to deal with both, and that's where this comes in. So, capital A on top there, is the deraisa, of biblical prohibition is, you guessed it, bishul. The issue when discussing any of this stuff is this bishul? That's my first issue. Issue capital A is cooking. That's what we've been discussing all along, which is the real deal, changing, you know, as we've discussed before, changing an item by employing heat. And that's again Malacha 11, if anyone's interested in keeping track of the numbers. Mm-hmm. Capital B is Havara. Havara being kindling, starting a fire, increasing a fire. The number escapes me at this moment. It's 20 something. Oh, right here. If you're again interested in killing 38. Malacha 38, yeah, very end, I should remember that. So that's capital B. Capital B is Havar, which is kindling, which is starting a fire. So, you know, we are, although they're two very separate malachas, one does not necessarily have to happen with the other. The fire could pre-exist, or the food could be already cooked and you turn the fire. You know, they obviously are independent, and it can be violated independently. But the rabbis are interested and concerned about both coming together at the same time. Do you have a different... Maybe 37? Okay, so that's capital A and capital B. Again, the first one being Bishul, the second B being Var, being the fire itself. Okay, now it's Surah Rabbanan when things get a little more exciting. Lowercase A is cooking a liquid that has already been cooked. Cooking a liquid which has already been cooked. So we mentioned earlier that is a rabbinic prohibition. But the rabbis came along and said, don't do that because it's too close to capital A. It's just too close for comfort. We don't want you warming pasteurized milk because it's too easy to go ahead and cook unpasteurized milk. Or hot, previously warmed water as opposed to tap water. That's lowercase A. Okay, so capital A and lowercase A in this case are similar. Now, lowercase A, double A, this is a... Exera, as we discussed in the very beginning, a rabbinic fence, similar to the one right before it, the rabbinic fence that we will prohibit certain things because you might come to cook. You might come to cook. So that, again, to show the contrast, capital A and lowercase A were cooking, taking pasteurized milk, putting it in a saucepan, the example given before, that is a rabbinic prohibition of cooking. AA is not that. AA is not the actual act of warming the food. AA is going to be, don't do certain things because they will likely lead to, they will engender the cooking as the next step. So don't do, we have to do this all the time. Don't do step one, because that could very easily and likely lead to step two. Okay? So it's... it is different, again, as we get further on along and more examples are shared, it'll be a little more clear, but double A is another step removed from the real deal. Okay, and then, yeah, we'll touch on triple A right away, whether that's the next item or the last item is up to you, and that is something which looks like cooking. We prohibit, oftentimes, maybe not in our mind, not always, but we prohibit things that look like cooking. It looks like cooking. You've satisfied all the other issues. It's really not cooking. It's not a liquid that's being reheated. It's not going to lead me to cook. But it is something which looks to others like cooking. That also is going to be prohibited under certain circumstances. This is akin to a famous halacha. I don't think we've discussed really much at all of Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin is not doing something which looks fishy. You can't go into McDonald's to get a Coke because of Maris Ayin, because it would lead others to think you're either getting a hamburger and hamburgers are kosher at McDonald's, or they're going to think that you don't keep kosher. Neither of those suspicions are things we're allowed to engender in other people's minds. And therefore, that's the classic case of Maris Ayin. Don't do an activity which is totally permissible because it looks bad. It looks bad. And again, then it either leads you to be suspect, or it leads you to guide people in the wrong direction. You're either a role model and they're going to follow you erroneously, or you've no longer, you know, you're no longer a role model. They think negatively about you when they shouldn't. So that's Mara sign. So this is similar, in a certain sense, similar to that. Maybe there's certain differences, but okay. So that's A, double A, and triple A, all lowercase. And then lowercase B, going back to what we had before, uppercase B was Havara, which was kindling. So here also, we're going to have rules around not violating Havara, not violating kindling on Shabbos. So there's going to be certain rabbinic rules which are in place to prevent one from violating kindling on Shabbos with regard to food and cooking. I mean, all this has to do with cooking in general. Okay, so my goal was to line up the Bishul and the Havar pieces and to show there's a lot of multifaceted different layers of issues that we will need to address. So that, for example, the hot button issues which you're already asking about, you leaving a challenge up before Shabbos, and that we do it every week, right? You put a challenge up Friday afternoon and you enjoy it Shabbos, Friday, you enjoy it Shabbos day. Or removing the challenge. Let's stay in order here. What was my second? Yeah, removing, let's say, in yeshiva was a big deal, teenage boys. Friday night challenge. Waiting to Shabbos day is not, it doesn't work. You have to have Friday night challenge also. But if you have this huge, humongous pot, the yeshiva makes, 15 of them for all the boys. So you take the challenge off the fire and then put it back. Most of our homes, we don't think we typically do that. But there's certainly cases where it could come up. So is that permissible? We'll discuss how that works. And then the last one is warming food on Shabbos. So we talked about, someone touched on before about the heating plates and timers and all that kind of stuff. So, each of these issues will have to be addressed. I mean, either dismissed, it's just not relevant in that case, or addressed. It'll be permissible or not based on each of these five issues. Okay. Is that clear as mud? It's going to get muddy before this is over, yes. Okay, so if that's good so far, at least to the extent that it can be, we're going to move to the second section. And we'll get through part of this or most of this, and then we'll stop. Section 2. So section 1 was basic concepts, ideas, again, pieces, a glossary, if you will, terms, ideas that are really disparate pieces that don't yet come down to halacha. Now we're going to get, in putting some of these things together, we're going to get to some halachos, and then the following section, I think it's called the section 3, yep, following section we'll put the halacha, three practical examples I just gave, for Shabbos, returning on Shabbos, and starting heating on Shabbos. We'll go through each of those in section 3 and correlate them with each of the issues. We'll ask ourselves what issue applies, what issue doesn't. Okay, but just for right now, section 2 is typical applications. Here we're talking about, we're putting together the type of food and the vessel and coming up with what's permissible on Shabbos. So the first one is a Kli Rishon Al Ha'esh, which is a first vessel on the fire. What the question in all of these cases is, what can you put in these vessels? What can you put into these vessels? Again, we'll focus later on the oven and the hot plates and all that kind of stuff, but let's first get the vessels out of the way.
Again, what is this Kli Rishon
Al Ha'esh? That's the first vessel on the fire. We're going to follow the same order as we had before. We're going to throw in one additional fact, but basically we're just going to follow the same order that we had initially. So, a Kli Rishon on the fire, first vessel on the fire, the only thing you can put in such a thing on Shabbos would be something that was already in a Kli Rishon on the fire. Which means, if you've got a challenge, the classic case, you've got a challenge which is drying out. You're afraid the challenge's not going to make it, the shul's taking longer, rabbi spoke too long, whatever it is, right? Rabbis never speak very long. And you want to put more water in that challenge. You're allowed to do that if the water is coming from an urn or a pot or a kettle or something like that, because then what you're doing is you're simply transferring the water from a first vessel on the fire to a first vessel on the fire. That's perfectly fine. Even if the second one is hotter, so to speak, than the first.
From the first cup.
So once it's in a cup, it gets... We're going to ignore that for now.
So how would you physically do that?
Yes.
So you... Well, the... Okay, let me... I can't ignore it again. The most obvious example here would be, let's just before I get to answer your question, would be a kettle. You've got a kettle of water, which I haven't seen a kettle in, 25 years, but let's say you have a kettle, and I'm sure many folks still use it. But just as an example, kettle's on the fire. Kettle may not, again, be the best thing to use on Shabbos. I don't know how long it lasts with the water in there, but taking a kettle which is on one burner and pouring it into the chalent pot, which would be a classic example of this. You're taking water from a kli rishon on the fire and pouring it into a kli rishon on the fire. Okay, so now more practically speaking, I'm not going to get out of this so fast. More practical example is you got an urn. And an urn is, of course, plugged in, and that's a kli rishon that's on the fire. You generally cannot simply pour from the, unless they happen to be next to each other, and you lift the urn up a little bit, the whole gymnastics. Generally speaking, you're not going to get the urn water directly into the chalent. So there is quite a bit of discussion about this, and yes, that would be permissible to pour from the urn into a pot and then directly into the chalent would be, according to most posting, is in fact permissible. Even though you're going down, so to speak, you're going from a first to a second and then second to a first, as long as it's an immediate process. Certainly if it cools off, all bets are off. There's no way. But if it's an immediate process, you're holding it, you're pouring it, we're getting into issues we haven't really touched on yet, but that would be fine. That would be fine. But the classic, at least conceptually, I only avoided that, I don't want to not skirt the issue, and you obviously need to know, but just conceptually as we move down through these and they're going to get more and more lenient, answering that question messes things up a little bit. So just conceptually speaking, the easiest way to conceive of this progression is kli rishon, kli rishon. Okay, not taking away from the leniency of what I just mentioned to you. Okay, so that's really going to be it.
So
I don't want to elaborate too much. Yeah. If you didn't have any other hot liquid available, it was tap water, then you're in trouble. I mean, you could take the chalent and move into a third vessel, and then or second vessel, actually. There might be some other issues with that, which we'll touch on later. But certainly, let's say, for simplicity's sake, just to avoid some of the issues, let's say a soup. And it got very thick, and you wanted to add the water to that. You could not add the water, cold water, to a kli rishon. It would have to be in a kli sheni. It would have to be a sheni or shlishi for sure, would be fine. You could not add it to the rishon. The only thing you're allowed to add to that rishon, to the first vessel, would be a hot water that's coming from another kli rishon. Yeah, that's exactly it. That definitely illustrates the contrast. Which, definitely is a plug for having an urn up on Shabbos. It can save your challenge or other foods. Okay, the next one down, ladies, is the kli rishon that's removed from the fire. So now you've taken the pot and you put it on the counter, you put it on a trivet, it's no longer sitting on the fire. So here, you are allowed to put a cooked solid, hot or cold, we don't care. Any cooked solid can be placed in this kli rishon that's no longer on the fire. And also, continuing from before, a cooked liquid that's still hot. A cooked liquid that's still hot. Sure. The things you're allowed to put in a kli rishon that's not on the fire. So again, you've got the chicken soup and you moved it off and put it on the counter. So you could put in any cooked solid, whether the solid cooked. fully cooked piece of chicken, whether that chicken is hot or that chicken is cold, you would, in fact, yes, be allowed to put it into the chicken soup. Let's say you have cold chicken in the fridge and you want it to lose some of its frigidness, you can drop it into the soup and let the soup warm it up a little bit. It's perfectly fine. Cooked chicken. And also a hot liquid that's still, a cooked liquid that's still hot. And here we're not really particular if it's coming from a Rishon, coming from a Sheni, coming from a Shlishi, even if we really don't care.
You couldn't add a cooked liquid that's cold.
Cooked liquid that's cold, you could not add at this point. Yes. A cooked liquid that is cold, you cannot add because it's still considered a Kli Rishon. And then you still have the rabbinic prohibition of reheating that cooked liquid that's now cold. You can quickly see, I should show you one, you can quickly see how a whole huge chart, an overwhelming chart, can be made out of these halachas. And I took a look at that chart and I said, you know, it's maybe good for review, it's definitely not good to learn from, because it's just, you got five types of foods, liquid, solid, and then you have all these different, 6 different ways of heating them up in a vessel, and it just gets very, very complex, as we'll see as we go. So that Kli Rishon that's removed from the fire, again, just to reiterate, it's okay to put a cooked solid in there, whether it's hot or cold is immaterial, it's totally fine. And you're not, and you're also allowed to put a cooked liquid which is still hot. Exactly. Now I'm hesitating, you know, to go into the reason for each one, but just to illustrate the difference between a first vessel on the fire and a first vessel off the fire, the reason it's so much more lenient is because you no longer have the issue of looking like cooking, which was, I think, AA. I don't remember my letters here, but. Yeah, AAA. AAA was, it looks like cooking. So if you take a cooked piece of chicken, hot, let's say hot even, and you put it into the pot on the fire, that already looks too much like cooking. You're taking something, you're putting it initially into a heating place on Shabbos. That we don't allow rabbinically. But if it's off the fire, we don't call that looking like cooking. That's not cooking. It could be scalding hot. It could be it was just boiling moments ago. But that's not a cooking process. It's trivet. It's not, you know, you don't cook that way on a Tuesday. So that's the reason for the difference, even though, again, the temperature difference is insignificant. The cooked piece of chicken is cooked piece of chicken, but that's the reason for that difference.
Is that like warm egg, cold egg? Some people like the egg, the hard-boiled egg, it's cold. Some people like the little
warm. That would be a great example. If it was a hard-boiled egg before, it's fully cooked, and then you want to warm it up, you could do that as long as it's off the fire. You could put it in a first vessel off the fire and warm that egg up. Perfectly fine. Yep. Great. Again, it's fully cooked egg.
I have a question, and maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead. What if you have like a bag of chicken wings in the freezer and they're already cooked and they have just like sauce on them, but they're cooked? Would that look like cooking if you put them on the hot plate? Since they're already cooked, but then there's like a little bit of a sauce.
Right. Well, it's two different issues, really. Meaning, if there's a significant amount of liquid, you got that issue of reheating a liquid. That would be a rabbinic prohibition of cooking. And then you have the separate issue of taking something and putting it in a place where you normally would cook.
Even if it's frozen, though.
Even if it's fully cooked.
Okay.
Right. We have an issue there. So then you get into timers and inverted pans, and there's a lot of ways to do it.
Okay.
There are a lot of ways around this. But just simply straight to put the chicken on a... directly on a hot plate, for example, which even hot plates, you know, we'll talk about different. There are different kinds of hot plates. I mean, there's, you know, we have one at home from Walmart. It's 400 degrees. That's you can cook on. You know, it's a skillet. It's designed to cook. Whereas you have the other side of that is you have warmers that are there's no dial. It gets 150. They're clearly not designed to cook, even though it's above the threshold of the 115. But they're clearly not. So we'll discuss the differences between those. Right. You definitely can't keep your hand there.
Yeah.
Generally, yeah. I mean, I've heard that they do make them, you know, very, you know, they just get chill out. That's a whole different, you know, if you keep it below whatever number you've picked, we just pick 115. If you keep it below that number, the rules change significantly. But it is true. Once it gets above that, you do have to contend with this issue of it's looking like, it looks like cooking. With a dial, without a dial, you know, you have to deal with that. There's certain issues which are just, you know, are dismissed if there's no dial to deal with. But yeah.
You have to think of other ways, like set it on something so it's not directly.
Mm-hmm. No, we're going to talk about that. The famous inverted pan method. Yeah, it's a great trick.
So on this second item,
yeah.
The cleavage shown removed from the fire,
mm-hmm.
you can put in a hot or a cold solid, but only a hot liquid. I'm confused why you couldn't put in a cold cooked liquid.
A cold cooked liquid in a cleavation. Because that's where we said, again, I don't remember the exact number.
Yeah,
lowercase a.
Then it looks like it?
Well, you're again, you're talking about
but
putting
it's not
a.
It's not a cooking element anymore, so it doesn't look like it's cooking.
Again, you're talking about putting a cooked cold liquid into a first vessel that's been removed from the fire.
Right. So you take your crock pot out of the base, so the crock pot's sitting then on your countertop. You could put in cold chicken that's already cooked, cold chicken that's already cooked, or hot chicken that's already cooked.
Right.
You could put in
hot water. Right.
But you couldn't put in
cold water that's already cooked.
Well, water's not cooked. But you couldn't put in, let's say you had other chicken broth in your refrigerator.
Right. Cannot do that.
Cold.
Right. Because that's exactly where it gets confusing. You're right. It does not look like cooking. I mean, the halacha was defined that does not look like cooking because it's no longer on the fire source.
Right.
But that would be rabbinically prohibited because it is cooking a liquid. Meaning, again, they extended.
You can't cook it because it's already cooked.
Right, biblically. But if you recall, we said the rabbi said that that's biblical, that's rabbinic cooking because it's too close for comfort. Heating cold water is going to be. We're going to label it cooking, even if it's technically not, because we can't readily distinguish between tap water and cooked water.
But chicken broth.
Clearly different.
It's clearly cooked.
Right. True. When Chazal made the rules, though, they made them a category.
But it's cooked. But like you would know it's cooked, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Chicken broth is not water, and you know it's not the water.
If you have a water pitcher out of my refrigerator, then you don't know what it is. Chicken broth.
Right. But it's an excellent question. But the rabbis made this rule. They made it in categories. They didn't make specific examples. Because you can readily see, you know, one person says this does look like it was before, this one says it doesn't. Chazal made categories, and categories are the five categories, and that falls into that category.
Okay.
By the way, you didn't find out about the whipped cream?
No. Please forgive me. I will. I'm also sorry.
I read an article that said that it's not allowed to do puzzles
on Shabbat. Puzzles. Sorry. There are many people who say that, indeed. I've seen postings say you can sit with your kids and they can play. In other words, you can guide them along and they can put the pieces together. But it's an issue of kosev, of writing and making making a meaningful message. It comes out of the picture. That's for an adult. That's something I should avoid. Okay. Thank you, ladies. Same time, same channel next week, unless we're in Yerushalayim, and then we'll be there.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.